Welcome to the Multifamily Investor Situation Room, a podcast designed to help new and seasoned real estate investors make better business decisions and improve returns. We take you behind the scenes with industry experts and explore the challenges, the options, the sacrifices, and the decisions made to close the deal. And now, your host, Dion Huey.
Hello, Sit Room executives. Welcome back. Today on this episode, we have Kavitha Baratake, a principal at Cherry Street Investments. She is an Austin-based real estate investor and a full-time multifamily sponsor with over 10 years of investing experience in single-family and multifamily real estate. She has successfully acquired, rehabbed, managed, and owned several single-family and multifamily investment properties in Central Texas area. She is currently invested in over 2,000 plus units in San Antonio, Dallas-Fort Worth, Atlanta, and Phoenix as a limited partner and over 450 doors as a general partner and key principal. She currently sponsors apartment investments with boots on the ground partnerships in various markets throughout the country. Hello, Sit Room executives. It is my pleasure to have on the show Ms. Kavitha Baratake. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Dion. Happy to be here.
It is my pleasure. Well, why don't we go ahead and get started and go ahead and tell us how you got started in real estate. Tell us about your background.
Sure. I was in IT for almost the last 20 years. I came from India to the United States in 98 and went to college here, the usual stuff, and went to work for IBM for almost 15 years. And somewhere along the way, I realized I really loved investing. So I ended up in stocks and options and finally found my way to real estate. I was a little bit lost, but I found it. And since I found real estate, I don't think there was any turning back. The only thing I did really switch was going from single family homes, which after a few years, like a lot of us in the industry do single family homes and start there and then realize, okay, this isn't scaling. This isn't taking me where I want to be. So I switched from that to multifamily about 3 years ago and just never looked back.
Okay. So you said you started off with stocks and options. So equities and everything. So can you tell us, what was it that, was more appealing as far as the real estate aspect of it versus the equities for some of the listeners out there that are investing in equities?
Sure. I think for me, it was just the volatility of it. If anyone has dealt with stocks and options, especially options, they know how crazy it is. You make a lot of money, you'll lose a lot of money too. And I did all of that. And I just found that I was spending way too much time on it. Mm-hmm. And time I didn't really have because I had a full-time job the entire time. So I wanted something that I could focus on and, you know, help build that wealth, but without that constant amount of time devoted to it every single day. I mean, not to say that real estate doesn't take time, but it is not that kind of time consuming where you get on the computer, you're logged in, you're looking at your stocks or your options every single day. So I just found, especially options trading, was too stressful for me. I felt like I was on the hook all the time, and it just didn't feel like this is the way to be making money. And I had some huge swings up and swings down. And I just couldn't tolerate the highs and the lows. I think it was a good learning process for me to establish my relationship with money, because I realized I can't let losing or winning take me high or low, you know, that emotional investor. And a good investor is not an emotional investor. And that's what I got out of it. And I'm like, I am an emotional investor. I need to learn how to manage my emotions better. So I think that was valuable lessons, which helps me in real estate as well.
Okay. So let's circle back. You mentioned from there you transitioned into single family, right? And with the single family investing, so why did you choose single family rather than going directly into multifamily investing?
I wish I knew about multifamily. I think most of us don't know, right? Like most of us don't know what we don't know. And the only thing I know is like, even now I talk to investors, I ask them, how do you invest in real estate? They say, I want to buy a single family home. And that's what we know. I mean, we don't know the power of, hey, I'm going to go buy an apartment complex. Sounds really big and daunting and scary, right? But when you start looking at it as a syndication, or even a small apartment, it's really not that daunting. But as a new investor, I think single family is approachable. I wish someone had told me about passive investments in apartments, but I didn't know what I didn't know. Mm-hmm. So I just knew that housing prices were trashed in Austin and like everywhere else in 2009. And I saw an opportunity and I said, hey, if I can buy a house for 100,000 or less than 100,000, it's great, because if you look at the replacement cost, houses were selling like $53 a square foot. The replacement cost is higher than that. So it was a deal. There was no doubt about it. And I don't regret it. I just wish I knew about multifamily sooner.
Okay. So at what point did you hear about multifamily syndication?
Sure. I had been looking for a while. I had this vision of, I'm going to own my own apartment, like a 30 unit or something small, but manageable. And that's it. I'm going to retire and I'm going to do whatever I want. I'm going to dance and I'm going to do all the fun stuff that I want to do with my life. But I don't think it worked out like that, because I kept looking for an avenue to get into multifamily, but I didn't know anyone that was doing multifamily. And luckily in 2017, I got introduced, a friend of mine introduced me to her friend, and she was in one of the multifamily groups out of Dallas. And I started talking to her and I've been telling, hey, I've been trying to do this for a long time. I'm glad I found you. And she was in my house for a New Year's party and we started talking and I was like, okay, that's it. I'm in, you know, tell me where to go. And interestingly, she led me to a meetup in Austin, about multifamily meetup. And I went there. But before I went there, I was in Quest IRA. I attended a meetup where one of the mentors was coming to speak at the Quest IRA meetup. That also happened. So it was kind of like multiple things sort of led me to the same place. And it just, took off from there.
Okay. All right. So can you walk us through, when you got into your first multifamily deal, how did you get into that actual deal? So how did you participate in the first multifamily deal? So you transitioned, walk us through the transition from the single family into the multifamily deal.
Sure. I have to say I was passive for a while, because mm-hmm. I had a really busy full-time job that I had just gotten into a year before I got into multifamily. So there was no question that I was going active, because I just didn't have the time. My job was busy. I was traveling. I have a child. It's just too much on my plate. So I decided I'm just going to do passive, but I'm going to learn everything I can about the business. But interestingly, when I did my first deal, I knew almost nothing. I was accredited and they were like, oh yeah. I mean, I met them at a meetup, the sponsors, and everybody was talking great things about them. I'm like, I'm just going to invest. I went, saw the property in San Antonio. I liked the property. I didn't know what I didn't know. I learned a little bit walking through the property with them about the things they were going to do with the property. And I asked a lot of basic questions. I think at that time, I didn't know how to read a pro forma. I had no idea. So I just invested anyway, which I would recommend in hindsight, but it turned out okay, because the sponsor was reputable and, you know, the property was a decent, good property in San Antonio. And anything in the last 3 years has only gone up, mostly, unless you bought a really poor location. And that wasn't a poor location. That was a great location. It was a Class B property. So I felt like it couldn't go that horribly wrong. So I invested anyway. So that's kind of how I got started. But of course, along the way, I got educated and I'm like, oh, that wasn't a smart thing to do. I should have learned the business first before I got in. And I think that's sort of been my goal now. When I talk to investors, I want to educate them first. I want them to understand more of the numbers and what they're getting into before they invest, because I don't recommend they do what I did.
Mm-hmm. And now you've taken basically a more active role. If I remember, you've resigned from your full-time position, right? Now you're an active GP in several deals and everything. So can you kind of walk us through that right now?
Sure. Mm-hmm. So earlier this year, January, actually, I started looking at, okay, I knew I wanted to transition out of my IT job at some point and do my own business. I think that's been on the back of my mind for a very long time. I just didn't know what that business would look like. And I didn't even know if it would be multifamily, to be honest. I knew I was doing passive, but I didn't know how active I wanted to be. My vision is always like buy my own apartment, do my own thing, right? Mm-hmm. And all of 2018, I tried to underwrite a bunch of small deals, right? 40 unit, under 40, under 50 unit deals, thinking I'm going to still do that, what I wanted to do. And it just, I mean, the underwriting just wasn't working for me. And then I kept underwriting. I'm like, oh, this is not the deal. This is not the location. And, you know, after almost 100 properties, I was like, I think this is not happening. The universe is trying to tell me something here. So interestingly, in January, so I had sold a bunch of stock from my company. My company went public 4 years ago. So I sold a bunch of stock and I was sitting on a cash and I didn't, you know, the time, just the opportunity cost, right? Just sitting on cash and a bank account was really bothering me. So I said, I'm going to try to figure out ways to deploy that and meet more people and maybe get into a tenancy in common with someone, you know, find more deals, basically. That the, if the deal was already there, I could be a part of the deal. So I started going to a lot of events this year, and I started with Radcliffe in January in Tampa. It was completely last minute, and something was telling me I need to go to this event. And so I had a really crazy busy week that week at work because my entire team was down in Austin. And it was like long days, all day meetings, and then ended up in Tampa on Friday, late because my flight was delayed. But anyway, I made it. And I think that was sort of the turning point where stuff started clicking in because I met someone at the event that really talked me out of buying in a small apartment. And more focused me more towards, hey, why don't you go bigger and more into syndications and don't try to focus on doing everything like you and I talked about, right? You mm-hmm. can't do it all. Sometimes you have to look at one piece of the syndication that you feel like you can contribute most effectively to and just move with it. And I have to thank him for it because he really encouraged me and mentored me away from this whole single buy an apartment, because honestly, if I did that, that's all I would do. I know that if I bought a 30 or 40 unit, that's all it would consume me, right? I wouldn't be able to do any more deals. So he instead said, hey, why don't you distribute your cash across multiple investments, become a passive in all the deals that you're doing, which made sense. So that's sort of what it got me on, the journey it got me on. So I ended up doing my first deal with him and raising capital for him. So it just, I didn't know what I could raise. I didn't know anything about anything. So I knew the apartment business, but I didn't know anything about connecting with investors and raising capital. So that was a journey, and that was an interesting journey, but I wouldn't say it was too hard for me. I realized that I had so many connections already for people with money, people who didn't know what to do with money, that raising capital just came pretty easy to me. And connecting with people, I absolutely love it. I mean, mm-hmm. I could talk to people all day long, and I realized it's sort of, I think he saw in me what I didn't see in myself. So I'm mm-hmm. grateful for that.
Mm-hmm. So would you say like one of the, a big challenge that you have been faced with in your business is kind of, with the capital raising side, maybe just kind of figuring this out, this aspect out, because it's new and something that you haven't done before? Or maybe you could elaborate a little bit more about that and give us a little bit more.
I think I had several challenges along mm-hmm. that way the last, 10 months, 11 months now. Mm-hmm. The first one definitely was I wanted to connect with investors. I wanted to figure out a way to establish that thought leadership, also educate investors, because I really believe that education is the key, right? I had some friends saying, hey, I trust you. I want to give you my money. I'm like, I don't really want it. Mm-hmm. I want you to understand what you're getting yourself into, because it's always a risk, right? When you invest in something, there's always a risk. And yes, we always try to hedge the risk. We try to figure out how to minimize the risk, but there's going to be a risk. And I want investors to walk into an investment with their eyes wide open, not like, I trust you, I'm going to give you my money. That's too much responsibility, to be honest. You know, someone who doesn't understand anything, even if they're accredited, I still don't want their money unless they understand the investment. So I started a meetup in Austin. And for passive investors, I called it a purely passive meetup. And I realized in the first few months that passive investors are passive for a reason. They don't have time. They don't want to come to a meetup in the evenings. So I was expecting, the first meeting was great. I mean, for a local meetup, I got a good number of people in there because I had been talking about multifamily a while. A lot of interest had built up. And so a lot of people did come. But I found it hard to sustain the momentum with passive investors because they aren't going out there seeking information. They want information to come to them, is what I realized. So they're passive for a reason. If I had all the time, I would be out there learning and doing stuff, right? But if I don't have time, what am I going to do? I want information to come to me. Although I have to admit, I was a passive investor who actually drove to Dallas every other weekend to learn. So I was a motivated passive investor. But I found most people aren't. They don't even come to a meetup in Austin. So I think the turning point for me to get past that challenge was going to this webinar format, because in my head, I thought, okay, this isn't working very well, or at least I feel like I'm spending a lot of time trying to do these meetups and people, I'm not getting the kind of participation or reach that I want to get. So since they're passive, how about I try the webinar format? I have nothing to lose. You know, I'll try to do both for a while and then see which one sticks. So webinars have been outright the best thing, because another thing I realized when I was doing meetups is a lot of people were interested when I posted, you know, just pictures of the meetup or talked about the meetup on social media. They were like, okay, where can we access the information? Is there a recording? I wasn't recording a meetup, right? Mm-hmm. It's just the quality and all that. I didn't have to worry about that. So I realized there was more demand, maybe just not in Austin, but outside as well for that information. It just had to be packaged differently. So for me, moving to that webinar format has been the best thing ever.
Okay, great. Excellent. So kind of just transitioning to an online format and, you know, leveraging social media. And I have noticed that you've been very, very active and you're getting a lot of engagement on social media. And I've been engaging a lot as well with you on social media. And I mean, you're really posting a lot of good content, and your webinars, I mean, definitely really good and good, valuable content. Absolutely. So you had this first capital raise with your first deal that you had GP'd on earlier this year. And so have you taken down any other deals after that this year as well as a GP? And so I take it your role on those was also on the capital side too?
Yes. So okay. I have done three other deals besides that one since I started. So I also got an opportunity to become a KP on a deal, which I was trying to build my resume, right? Like get the KP thing done. So I'm ready for sponsoring my own deal at some point. So I'm kind of working towards it. I have questioned myself whether I want to asset manage. And I think where I am right now is if there's a property in San Antonio or somewhere close to me, that it makes sense for me that I can drive down and be there, it makes more sense to do the asset management because I want to be active. If I take a property in Phoenix and asset manage, sure, I can do it, but there's only so many times I can really be there realistically with my family situation and everything else. Mm-hmm. So I think where I am right now is if there is a property elsewhere outside of the Austin area or within 100 miles or 150 miles of me, I'd rather not prefer to do the asset management and focus on the race. And if there's a property close to me, I'm open to doing the asset management because I have a lot of experience managing my own single family homes and doing the entire rehab, fixing and flipping and all of that stuff. So I feel pretty comfortable with the operational side of things as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I'm open to it. It just depends on the opportunity. So I am looking at a few deals in San Antonio right now, mm-hmm. which I'll be more on the active asset management side.
Got it. Okay. And I think I saw somewhere that you're winding down your single family portfolio right now too, right? Okay.
I'm trying to sell them. It hasn't happened as quickly as I'd like it to because I've also been traveling a hot lot this year. So that's made it really challenging to sell because I was in India and I couldn't sell this summer. And summer is really the best time to price your home on the market. And I got into the market too late. I didn't get the offer I wanted. I pulled it out. I said, I don't have to really sell it. I can rent it back up. Mm-hmm. So that's what I ended up doing. But next summer, I'm going to try to sell a few. I don't know if I'll exit all of them because some of them are in great locations in Austin. And I really have high hopes for Austin in the next 10 years. I think mm-hmm. it's going to go up, right? Like long term, Austin is becoming a really hot market mm-hmm. because a lot of Californians and New Yorkers moving in and prices have gone up crazy. And mm-hmm. I think they'll continue to grow up in the longer term. I think in shorter term, we're going to see a setback. I mean, I'm sure every market is going to see it. Mm-hmm. But in the longer term, I think Texas in general, Austin, Dallas particularly are going headed up. That's mm-hmm. at least my crystal ball.
Mm-hmm. Okay, interesting. Mm-hmm. I saw a headline somewhere actually right before our podcast here interview. Something along the lines of how California, there was a bit of an exodus as far as the population, people leaving California. I just saw the headline. I didn't read the details. So it's interesting. Funny you mentioned that.
Yeah, I think 700,000 people or something like that.
Yeah, it's a lot.
It's a huge number.
Yeah, it's a lot.
And I think a lot of them are either in Austin, Dallas, or Atlanta. I think those are the three places which have seen the major influx of people.
Where they're going to, huh? It's funny you mentioned that. I'm going to have to look into that now. Okay. So what would you say would be some of the, especially for a lot of the newer people that are looking to get started, you know, what are some of the biggest challenges that you're seeing some of the people that are looking to get started? What are they facing with some of the biggest challenges? And how do you suggest they kind of, you know, deal with these big challenges and overcome them?
I think starting right now is pretty daunting, to be honest, because you are in the peak of the market, right? It's really hard to underwrite deals that make sense because a lot of it is so overpriced. So I definitely think that's a huge challenge right now. And a lot of people, and I understand this, you know, this is the analysis paralysis stage too, because you're scared to make a mistake. And it's really easy to make a mistake at this time, right? When the market is cooperating with you, you know, you sort of have those wins in your favor. It's different, right? Like if you started 8 years ago, even 5 years ago, the market was going up and you couldn't really make any big mistakes because even if you made, you know, your mistakes would be covered because the market was shooting up. I mean, the prices were just going up. But I don't feel the next 2 years are going to be the same, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not going to be, the winds are not going to be in your favor. You're going to be against them. So I feel like it's really important for people to not rush into deals. Yes, you want to establish and keep going into your business, but also be a little more cautious of what deals you're getting into. And I think focusing on a piece that you're most comfortable with is important because if you try to do it all, you end up doing nothing. Mm-hmm. So find someone experienced that you trust that you can partner with. This will probably my advice because that'll help you move without this analysis paralysis and also make sure you don't get into the wrong deal. Just because everybody's doing deal, you don't want that deal frenzy. So what is that? I heard this term. It really stuck with me. Irrational.
Exuberance.
That's mm-hmm. the state we are in, right?
Yeah.
Because everybody's like, oh, I just want to do a deal. I'm like, no, you want to do a good deal. Mm-hmm. You don't want to just do a deal, right? Because I see that happening, and I'm like, you know, I'm going to be very cautious right now, because I would only partner with people who are conservative in their approach and their underwriting. And I think that's what people should look for at this point in the market cycle. Just take it easy and focus on good sponsors. Focus on, maybe you're good at capital raise. Maybe you're great at asset management. A lot of people don't want to do asset management or the operational stuff because it's so time consuming. Maybe you can offer those services to an existing sponsor and offer to take that off their plate. So it doesn't even have to be a good deal, a new deal. It just has to be a deal that you can get some experience. Maybe this is a time for you to just get that experience, be prepared for a downturn and to buy at the downturn.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So it just depends on what your skill set is. If you're great at raising capital, maybe you should focus on that. And maybe you should even look at other asset classes. Mm-hmm. A multifamily might not be the best asset class right now. How about mobile home parks, self-storage? And honestly, that's what I'm doing. I'm looking into other asset classes right now because I do feel there's a crazy, irrational behavior happening, exuberance happening in the multifamily. I feel like everybody's rushing in and I am a little cautious, unless I've been pretty picky about my deals lately. So I'm also looking at other asset classes that don't have that kind of frenzy. I mean, they don't have that kind of thing, and I'm trying to learn them right now, and I don't know when I'll be ready to actually invest, but I figured this is a good learning phase.
Okay. All right. So what would you suggest would be some good reading for new people coming in?
So real estate specific reading or general reading?
Anything that you would suggest. Maybe it could be real estate related or personal development.
Personal development wise, something that's really helped me lately is mm-hmm. just establishing a discipline. I think it's always a challenge for me to stay consistent. I work in spurts. So I do a lot of stuff and then I do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I have this cyclical, and that was a constant feedback in my job too. I'm like, you do a lot and then you do nothing. You do a mm-hmm. lot. So I've been trying to even that out and be more consistent and disciplined about my life. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the books which has really helped me, and I joined an accountability group as well for this, called Miracle Morning. And the book is Miracle Morning. It's by this guy called Hal Elrod, and very inspiring story of Hal Elrod. It's just, I want to say it's changed my life, but mm-hmm. I'm still working on it. I'm not 100% there where I wake up at 5:30 a.m. every day. I granted I don't do that, but I try to follow a grid morning routine. So I wake up, I meditate, I have affirmations, visualizations. It's this whole routine, right? Some days I admit I don't do all of it, but I try to get done whatever it is, 30 minutes of my time that I spend on those things, and then exercise and the good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I really think it's important to be disciplined. For me, at least for me, it's very important that I needed to bring more discipline into my life, especially as an entrepreneur, because you kind of can go off the hook. Because mm-hmm. you don't have to be anywhere at a certain time, right? It's you control your schedule. And that also means there's a lot of room for falling off. So yeah. I think discipline's been important for me. And I would highly recommend this book for anyone, Miracle Morning.
Okay. Excellent. Excellent. I haven't heard of this one, but I have heard of the author before, that name, Hal Elrod. But I'll definitely check out this book. All right. So if our listeners wanted to reach out to you, how could they get a hold of you?
Yeah, sure. I have three ways. I have a website, which is Cherry Street Investments. That's my company, Cherry Street Investments, all spelled out, .com. I also do webinars, and you can find me on YouTube as well as Cherry Street Investments. Of course, you can also find me on Facebook. I have a Facebook investor group called Purely Passive Investor Group. So.
All right. Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Kavitha. It was a pleasure having you on here today, and definitely looking forward to staying in touch.
Yeah.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dion. It was a good interview. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Same here.
Yeah. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Multifamily Investor Situation Room with Dion Huey. For more free podcasts, go to multifamilyinvestorsituationroom.com.